Hello and welcome to episode 113 of the Blue Cup Tools podcast. I'm Macklin of Sweden. Hi, I'm Francisco Gonzalez, also known as Grunislav, and with me as always...
Hello, I'm Ben Chandler, also known as Ben304, and I would like to give a shout out to Ivan, who's the other person that will get that reference.
Yeah, well...
Because literally no one else will.
It doesn't matter.
Well, maybe. You never know.
You never know with our audience. We have a wide and sprawling...
No, we don't.
We have like 200 followers on Twitter. That's pretty impressive.
Really?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Anyway.
I should do some hijinks on the Twitter account.
Maybe you should. People will appreciate it.
I even remember the password this time.
You do or you don't?
I do. No,
it's a pretty easy password to remember, to be fair.
It is, yeah. Yeah. Anyway. Now everyone's going to be trying to break into it, which is fine.
That's
who cares?
Fine. Yeah, whatever. Anyway, hello. Yeah, how are you? It's been a long time since we last podcasted. A lot's happened in the interim.
Yeah, well, I was traveling and you were traveling.
Yeah.
That kind of makes it, you know, a little less easy to podcast, but it's good. We're here again.
Hello. We've done podcasts before while you've been visiting, but we just didn't this time because we were both busy working.
Yeah.
And you were busy going out and buying me cake and assorted sweets.
I bought you one piece of cake.
Well, yeah, that's more than most people have bought me.
Well, maybe you should get some better friends. I'm just saying.
I'll put that
this
as
is a shout out to Francisco's friends.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, you came to visit the US. You were here for a while again. And I went off to Adventure X in the UK. I signed with a new publisher. That happened.
Congratulations.
Thanks. That happened while you were...
I already said that to you, but...
I know. Yeah. It happened when you were literally like flying from LA to New York while you were in the air. When you landed and I went to go see you at the airport, I was like, hey, I got a new publisher, and you were like,
"I actually
congratulations." I'm very tired.
I actually had thought, like, I wonder if it's gonna happen while I'm in the air. You know?
And it did. So there you go.
Yeah, I'm smart, or just. But I mean, I would have been dumb if I'd guessed wrong. So it was just a guess. Nothing.
Whatever. It doesn't matter. Anyway, so that's pretty much what we've been up to personal wise. Why don't we?
How was Adventure X? Talk about Adventure X.
Oh, yeah, Adventure X. Yeah, it was good. Moving on.
Okay, next.
No, I've got more to say. No, it was good. I had not been to Adventure X in 2 years. The last time I went was... it was at the same venue, but it was a different organizer. And so this was the first time that I went on... experiencing it under the new management, so to speak. And I was really impressed with how it's evolved and how it's grown, and it's really kind of outgrown the venue. The venue is real nice, but it is a university. It's on a university campus, and it's basically a building with a couple of lecture halls and space there. So like, the floor space itself isn't super crowded, but obviously that, you know, the building size means that they have a specific capacity for fire safety and whatnot. So I think the capacity is something about like somewhere in like the high hundreds or maybe 200 people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the past years that I had been, I think they had maybe, I don't know, gotten like about 150 on Saturday and maybe like close to 100 on the Sunday. But this time around, last year this happened too, they hit capacity like right away, so they had to start turning people away, which is unfortunate, but
yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah, but I mean, on one hand it's a shame, but on the other hand it's great that the event has gotten so big that it has gotten to the point where they have to turn people away.
Yeah, it seems like it's time to look for a bigger venue.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of spaces in London. The question is, are there any easily accessible and or affordable places in London? But then again, they do run the Kickstarter, and they don't really ask for very much, so I'm sure that they would get funded easily if they ran a Kickstarter just for the venue hire. So,
sure, they've not had a trouble getting the Kickstarter funded.
Yeah.
But I've seen.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I just unlocked a totally new area in The Witness that I've been trying to unlock for ages.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. Yes. Anyway, sorry to distract.
Oh, not at all. You sound sleepy. This is one of those sleepy... This is one of those sleepy Ben episodes.
I was way past sleepy, mate.
Then why are you still playing The Witness?
Well, because I had to keep myself awake while you took 45 minutes to eat your breakfast.
Oh, you hush. Listen, all I had for first breakfast was soy and multigrain Cheerios. I had to have more substantial food for my big tummy.
You haven't got a big tummy.
Well, I will after the breakfast I ate.
Mm.
So anyway, Adventure X was great. I got to meet a lot of people that I knew from the Twitterverse, but I hadn't actually met. Like, I finally got to meet Sean Aitchison after going to several Adventure X's and completely passing him by. I got to meet Richard Cobbett, who's a very nice fellow and who's been on our podcast before.
He sure has.
Yeah, I got to meet the backseat designers who we had nothing to do with their untimely demises. So,
correct.
I don't know why anybody still thinks that's the case. They looked very fine for people who had been allegedly blown up. And I got to meet a bunch of other people who I won't name, because if I exclude anybody else, then they'll feel sad. But I enjoyed meeting everyone, and the talks were real nice. I really enjoyed all the talks. There was an interesting panel on the first day about voice acting with the guy Rolf Saxon, who played George Stobart in the Broken Sword series, and Doug Cockle, who played Geralt from The Witcher, which I never played, but he was interesting to talk to, listen to, and I got to meet him.
He's got a great voice.
He does. He's a really nice, like, mild-mannered middle-aged man too, so it's really kind of strange to think of him in this role of white-haired man going around sleeping with all the ladies.
But honestly, like, the voice that he does in the game is pretty, I don't want to say low-key, but it's like...
It sounds pretty similar to the voice that you're doing right now, trying not to speak too loudly as to avoid waking other people up in your house.
And a tired person.
Yes. I'm tired from all the sex.
I mean... Is that also? I was wrong. I haven't opened up the area I was trying to open up. Now I'm upset.
Well, shucks. Continue. I'm sorry. My lovely girlfriend Jess gave a wonderful talk about the politics of world building, and I was very proud of her because it was her first official speaking gig, and the talk was very well received, and everyone was very impressed and continues to be impressed now that the video is online. So I recommend you go check it out. I linked to it on Twitter. She's been very busy, so she hasn't had the chance to do any self-promotion, so I've had to do it for her. But check it out. All the talks were interesting. There's a couple of talks that I had to miss for, you know, you can't see everything, unfortunately, and right. I had to go out and get lunch at some point. There was a couple of talks I wanted to see that haven't gone online yet, but from the first day mostly. But I guess the biggest name of the talk, or rather the
event,
thank you. The biggest name of the event was Brian Moriarty, who also has been on our podcast. This is also very kind. And he, appropriately enough, gave a talk about how his lecture from 2002 called The Secret of Psalm 46, which is a very interesting lecture about Easter eggs and eclipses and all sorts of interesting things. He mentioned about how it's an Easter egg in The Witness, which you're playing right now.
And I still haven't found it, along with many other things.
Yeah, so...
I imagine.
So he talked about how it sort of came to be in his communication with Jonathan Blow, and I guess the takeaway of the talk was how you never really know how your games will affect or inspire players, because he was he showed a tweet at the end where Jonathan Blow, it was a hashtag thank a creator, and Jonathan Blow had tweeted about how Loom had been really inspirational to him, and seeing the lecture had been inspirational to him. So he had this back and forth with Brian about putting the thing in the witness, and yeah. And it was a really good talk. It was Brian Moriarty is a very good lecturer. If you have the opportunity to see him speak ever, I highly recommend it, because I mean, there's plenty of videos of his talks, so you get a sense of them, but being in the room is a lot different to watching the video. So yeah. But it was cool.
You were telling me that he said it took him like something like 50 hours to complete the witness properly.
And he played it about 2 or 3 times fully because he beta tested it originally.
Right.
But then he went back when it came out and played it in full. And he had to super complete it, which part of super completing it involves finding all the Easter eggs for the projector room and watching. You actually have to...
Honestly, I gotta be honest, the projector room stuff is pretty easy.
Okay.
It's
finding this stuff that's probably
difficult.
God. Yeah.
I'm up to 30 hours and I'm like, there's no way I'm smart enough to finish this game.
Actually, that's funny, because I was talking to Jess last night and she said the same thing. She tried playing and she's like, I'm stuck and I feel like I'm not smart enough to figure this out. I'm like, well, persist.
I mean, I've finished the main storyline. Mm-hmm. I've finished the main thread of The Witness, which is interesting because the last, I think, 10 puzzles or so had about 3 or 4 that made me go, this is actually physically impossible to solve.
Okay.
It literally cannot be solved. And then, of course, you sit down and you keep working on it. And when you solve it, you feel amazing.
Right. You haven't listened to The Secret of Psalm 46, have you?
No, I'm waiting to find it in game.
Okay, yeah, well, you're in for a treat, because you have to watch it in its entirety. If you pause the game, apparently it resets and starts from the beginning. So you have to sit there and listen to it for an hour in order to register.
Well, I already... No, I'm not going to spoil anything.
Okay, good. Anyway, so yeah. And then, I hosted a quiz... which Richard Cobbett won along with Christopher Sachi, a.k.a. Lost Train Dude. So they proved their adventure game nerd credentials. It was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun.
It's funny because you tested the quiz on me and I knew nothing.
I did. I tested the quiz on you and you got not a single one right. And they got a lot of them right.
Yeah. I just don't know adventure games.
Eh. It's obscure trivia.
Anyway. Yeah, and I grew up playing shooters and strategy games.
Yeah. But actually, a nice little moment was I was kind of expecting Brian to sort of not stick around, because at practice he showed up on the Friday evening very briefly, and then he showed up like 5 minutes before his talk on the Sunday, and then after the talk he disappeared again. So I was thinking that was probably going to be his sort of, modus operandi again. But actually, he stuck around after his talk, and he was sitting outside in the lecture, or like outside in the space at a table by himself across from the bathrooms. And he was just kind of sitting there looking alone and forlorn. And I was like, why is no one talking to poor Brian Moriarty?
Jesus.
I thought maybe people were intimidated by him. So I went over and I saw that Christopher was talking to him. So I thought, okay, good. At least someone's talking to him. So then when I came out of the bathroom, the door made a very loud noise closing. And he said, why are you making so much noise, Francisco? And I said, ah. So then I walked over and I started talking to him. It was a weird intro, but it was...
He sounds like your grumpy neighbor.
He is. He is a grumpy neighbor. But it's funny because he sort of gives off the impression of being kind of like a cantankerous old grouchy guy, but he's really a very sweet man. And so
whereas I'm the opposite.
Yeah, exactly. So we talked a little bit, and he mentioned how he was in London not only for AdventureX, but he also was really interested in going to the British Library for reasons, which I won't say just in case. Mm-hmm. But he was going on about how they have all these amazing things in there, like handwritten copies of I Want to Hold Your Hand, and you know, Bach chorales written by hand, and the cool. The Codex Sinaiticus or something like that. I don't know how it's pronounced, but it's basically a Greek text that is used as, there's only about four copies in the world, and it's the Greek text that was used to translate the New Testament. And he's like, he was getting all excited. He's like, and it's all just there! All this amazing stuff, just there, under glass! It's incredible! And I was like, wow, that sounds really cool.
But, yeah, well, it's like what I've said to you, is like when we go to the Met.
Yeah.
I can't believe that those paintings are like just sitting there, like that you see in every book and you hear about, and you just are like, just there's a Monet, and then you walk around the corner and there's a Picasso, and it's just constant pop music of art.
Pretty much.
It's like seeing, you know, all the greatest hits all on one stage.
Yeah. So anyway, luckily, because Jess and I stayed a few days after AdventureX to go visit some friends in Brighton, and we went down on Monday, but before we did, we had a little bit of time in the morning, and so we went to the British Library to go see this stuff. And it was, in fact, incredible and very interesting, and we got to see the Magna Carta, one of the copies of the Magna Carta, as well as all this other stuff. And as I was looking around and looking at the stuff, who should I happen to see standing in front of one of the glass cases taking notes furiously but Brian Moriarty?
That's cool.
And so I was like, well, how do I go up to him and not interrupt his research? So I just sort of creeped up behind him and leaned in and went, "Hi, Brian, you weren't kidding. This stuff really is incredible." And he was like, "Yeah, look at this." And then he showed us the Codex Sinaiticus or whatever.
Oh, nice.
And he was like, "Look at that. Whatever, isn't
that old book?"
Well,
thing.
I mean, however it's pronounced. That's what I meant.
I see.
And he was like, "Look at this. Isn't this amazing?" And I said, "Yes, it is. Thank you for showing us." And I was like, "I'll let you get back to your thing." And he was like, "Okay, good seeing you." And then we disappeared. So that was a nice little cap off to the end of AdventureX. It was an amusing little encounter.
Hmm.
But yeah, I also got to go to the British Museum, which basically has everything that the British Empire ever stole from every other culture.
that's a big museum.
Yeah. So it was cool to see the Lewis chessmen and the Elgin marbles and the Rosetta Stone and all that sort of stuff. It's interesting because the British Museum is all artifacts. It doesn't have any paintings. It's just stuff.
Okay.
I mean, there's the National Gallery. That's all paintings. And the Tate, of course. But I didn't get a chance to go to those. So it was nice to be able to go to London and actually go to the museums, which are all free, which is great.
Well, to me, honestly, I think calling an art museum is an American thing. Because here, like what I'm used to is you go to the museum or you go to the art gallery.
Right.
And the art gallery has all the old paintings. The museum has all the other old, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Relics.
Yeah.
So I think that might be an Americanism.
It might be. Anyway, I've rambled on far enough about my experience at AdventureX. So let's move on to something else. Have you got anything you'd like to ramble about before we get into our topic?
Not really.
Okay. What is our topic?
I'm just...
Because I'm not asking this to be cute and letting you go for it. I'm literally, I forgot the topic.
No, I believe we're going to talk about because we're both getting towards the end of the projects that we're working on.
Uh-huh.
Or have been working on for the past, is it 2 years? It's close to 2 years.
Yeah, I don't know. I started designing Lamplight City on paper shortly after Shardlight, which was March of 2016. I think I had started writing it a little bit before that, but I didn't actually start building it in AGS until May of 2016. So it's been about...
But you'd done some sample graphics and stuff.
Oh, yeah, sure. I'd been doing, like, graphic tests, and I'd done nothing I ended up using in the game, of course, but...
But that's...
Yeah, I started doing, like, the preliminary design work a while before, but... it's been about a year and...
But yeah, I thought... Something. I mean, we've been doing these projects for a pretty long time.
Yes.
And we've been trying new stuff. I thought it'd be cool to talk about, you know, what's changed for us over the course of these projects.
Okay.
And what, you know, what we've learned. You know, because I think... Are you thinking about what's next yet?
Oh, absolutely.
Right, and I am too. And it's like... You know, it's interesting to reflect back on, you know, what the project has been and what you learned from it. So I thought it'd be cool to learn that. Obviously, you know, for both of us, it's the first time we've strayed beyond 320 by 200 in any serious way in, like, I don't know how long it's been for you, a long time.
Last time I worked in 640 by 400. 100 was the game that never got released that shall remain nameless because it was terrible.
Right.
And also Granny Zombie Killer demo. So that was like 2002?
Boy, that's a long time.
But then again, that was also line art, so that was completely different.
Right, but it still it means that you settled on your resolution.
Oh yeah,
and
sure.
And you stuck to that for...
Yeah.
You know, 15 years or not 15 years, but
close to it. Yeah.
Yeah. So what was it that made you change? I'm really curious because I know why I changed.
I think it was mostly because, well, at the time I was still working with Wajidai and I thought Wajidai was going to publish it. And I figured that if Unavowed was going higher resolution, then it wasn't going to. This was in the naive, well, not naive, but this was, you know, in the early days when I thought that Unavowed was going to come out before Lamplight City. And and I was like, well, if Dave publishes Lamplight City and Unavowed comes out and it's 640 by 360, obviously he's not going to take a step backwards and publish Lamplight City at low resolution. So I was like, you know, it's been long enough. I've been drawing at like higher resolution and scaling down anyway, so it's not going to be too huge a dramatic leap for me to do this.
So did that mean that you had to change much in terms of how you do your backgrounds, or was it just now you don't downscale them?
No, I still downscale them. I still painted a higher resolution and downscale them, but no, it didn't really change anything about how I do my backgrounds with regard to working in the new resolution. I mean, obviously, the last time I had drawn backgrounds for a game was A Golden Wake, and when I did those, I didn't use perspective grids like I do now. So, but that's nothing to do with the resolution. That's just to do with technique and learning.
Right.
So. My decision was just based on practicality more than anything else. And it wasn't until fairly into the project that I made the decision to do the sprites high res. So,
it was a long way in, yeah.
I mean, it wasn't so long way in that I had to redo that many animations, thankfully, because I hadn't done many animations. Aside from the main character's walk cycles and things like that, but that was easy to redo. It was really just a practicality thing. And in hindsight, I really don't know why I decided. Well, actually, I do. Because I figured that I was better at backgrounds than I was at character sprites. And so I figured that the transition to higher resolution wasn't going to be as jarring to me with the backgrounds as it potentially could be with the character sprites. And the first few tests I did of high-res characters looked terrible, and I hated them. And I was just like, I can't do this. And I thought they were going to be more complex to animate and all sorts of stuff. But then one day I just repainted one of my sprites in higher resolution and it came out looking good. And then I did it again and I was like, oh, this still looks good. And then I tried doing an animation and I thought, well, this is easy. And so that's it.
Yeah, I found that I had to redo stuff, you know, halfway through. Well, not halfway through. When I had some free time and I looked at my stuff and I thought, no, this isn't good enough, you know. And I think that all the time, you know. But I thought it would be a fairly big change, but it wasn't a big change in the ways I expected it would be a big change. And I guess that is, I thought the main thing would be that it would take me longer to do stuff.
Right.
And it does, but not to the extent that I thought it might.
Yeah, same. I mean, I'm still rotoscoping, but it's not like... I haven't found that... I guess it's not that higher resolution needs more frames. It's just more that...
I think you notice it more if there's less... If you're shortcutting frames in higher res.
Yeah, maybe. But, like, for example, the walk cycles, they're still 10-frame walk cycles. I was doing those in low res, and that's they look fine in high res. But, like, I think just
the biggest...
Go ahead.
I think one of the biggest things for me is because I, you know, I don't rotoscope. I just draw.
Yeah.
And I'm really not good at drawing human figures.
Mm-hmm.
So the stuff that I could get away with more in low resolution, I've really... I can't get away with it so easily in Unavowed. Right. And now there's stuff in Unavowed that I'm like, oh, I wish I'd known that when I did it.
Mm.
And there's some things that it's too late to change, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
so that's,
you live and you learn.
Yeah, I mean, that's the interesting thing, you know. And especially for me, I mean, I feel like the transition may have been harder for me in that the way that you draw, you're drawing realistic.
Mm-hmm.
Well, your intent is realism. I'm not saying that you're trying to do fully realistic graphics, but you're going for a drama type thing.
Right.
Whereas I never tried that until I worked for Dave.
Right.
So for me, it's been much less time to try and adapt to that style.
Mm-hmm.
And so pushing to higher resolution, more things can go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it would take me longer to do stuff. It doesn't take me longer. It's the amount of animations that Unavowed has is just crazy. It's a massive game.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't take really any longer to do. It's just that they look worse because there's stuff that I can't get away with. You know?
Wow.
Well, no, but in terms of not emotional, but in terms of, you know, practical stuff.
Right.
If you look at, you know, I don't want to, you know, call names out or anything like that. But if you look at something like Thimbleweed Park and you look at the human figures, you know, they look a very specific way and they get away with that because
because they're stylized. That's the style. That's, yeah.
Right. Whereas I don't get to have that. So, you know, so I'm still fighting that big time.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying.
And honestly, I'm not super interested in like doing the low res thing forever.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't, I really don't have like any fascination with it beyond the fact that it's quick to make.
Now, when you say low res, you're still
within my skill set.
Yeah, you're still talking about even 640 by 4, right? 360 is low res, right? You want to go even higher.
Oh, it's absolutely it's low res.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You know, no game is that low resolution anymore, except for, you know, budget indie titles.
Sure.
And I really don't have any sort of loyalty to that. I've done it because it's what I can do, but, you know, I don't want to be sort of stuck there. And I've been, you know, like I was pushing with Unavowed, I'm again pushing myself to like, okay, what's next?
Right.
Do
you feel like I don't want to be presumptuous and say mastered, but do you feel like you've gotten proficient enough in working at 640 by 400 to be able to say, okay, I'm going to feel like I can do it at the higher resolution?
I don't think that a lot of the stuff that I do now is super translatable to high resolution, to be honest.
Okay.
I don't feel that I can take a great deal of this. Well, the pixel, the way that I animate is kind of backwards, you know? So, yeah, that's a tough question, man. What I am doing now, I feel like, is kind of just more of the same. It's just a little tiny bit bigger, you know? And it's been a massive challenge. And, you know, I look at our old games now, I'm like, oh, geez, that's a lot of pixels.
Yeah.
You know? But, you know, I think it's important to keep pushing yourself, because I think I got stuck in a rut, and I think that's one of the things that held me back in terms of, you know, not being a great animator, not being great at doing human figures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got stuck in a comfort zone where I'm like, this works, I'll keep doing this. And sure, it worked, but something working isn't the same as something being good.
Right.
In fact, there's a very big difference.
Yeah.
I would suggest. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so I'm very keen to break out from that, you know, oh, this works, this is good enough.
Mm-hmm.
There's, in the past, it's been like, I was making games as a hobby and a bit of part-time work.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, oh, Jesus, I've actually got a job doing this now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I hope I can make games of this size on a daily basis.
Yeah. Well, work on games of this size on a daily basis, because if you were making a game of that size every day, that would be amazing.
Well, you know what I mean.
You'd be a machine. Like,
I mean, like, as a full-time gig.
Yeah, of course.
You know, and not get burnt out and not get worn out. So the test was, can I do that? By the end of Shardlight, I was like, I can do that. I can make games of... I'd never made a big game until Epiphany, which is when I got hired full-time.
Yeah, right.
You know, I never worked on a big game until Epiphany, so that was like, you know, I was like, okay, so I can do this. By the time we finished Shardlight, I was like, I know I can do it at 320 by 200. What's next? Right. Next was pushing the resolution up.
Right.
And, you know, and Unavowed is a special case because, you know, there's a lot more animation. There's more backgrounds. There's not a lot more backgrounds, honestly.
Hmm.
But also my goals changed through the project. You know, my goals started out as, can I actually do this? Can I do a game where you've got, you know, choose your player character, choose, you know, your party members, and they're all animated and it's at a high resolution. Once I worked out, yes, I can do that, my goals switched to, okay, can I take this success at actually making it happen and now make it look good?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, I always try and make it look good, but like, with the stuff that I learned in the past year, you know, so I was redoing sprites, I was retouching backgrounds and stuff after having learned stuff. And then, you know, now I've been going through being like, well, we've got all this resolution, why don't we use it to have like some animated, like, I don't know what to call them. Vignettes, I guess.
Close-ups? Transitions?
They're not really close-ups. Yeah, some of them are like establishing shots.
Yeah.
You know, but like break free of the very static frame that we're stuck to and have a bit of artistic license to do stuff. You know, and I knew I had by this point, because I've been practicing and studying and stuff, you know, I had the ability to create those. So, you know, I was about doing that. And now I'm like, okay, I can do that. I still don't like how the game looks. I still don't think it's good enough. You know, it's not good enough, but it's too late.
That's the curse, I think.
Sure, it's too late to start over, but it's time now that I'm going, you know, what's next? So when I finish work each day,
I think that goes back to what we've talked about before, which is a lot of the times on these games there are learning ground. Or our training ground for new things. Yeah. So obviously, once you reach a certain point where you feel comfortable, finally, you look back on your old work and you've done the majority of the work on the game, and then you think, "Oh, this doesn't look good."
Right.
It's happened to me. It's happened. We've talked about it. Both of us. It's happened to both of us. We've talked about it several times.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's just, you know, we don't have the luxury of being able to take time off between games and hone our craft or anything like that, because we need to be making games to earn our living. So it's, yeah, that's just the nature of the beast, unfortunately.
But I think there is, and I know that you've done this yourself, there is something to be gained from setting aside a specific amount of time each day to go, all right, what's next?
You
know,
sure.
What am I doing next? And, like, you know, you get your work done, you finish up. For me, it's cooking. I go and I cook. I like to cook because it relaxes me.
Mm-hmm.
And I do some cooking. I usually go for a walk if I can too. Mm-hmm. Depends on the weather. But, yeah, I'll go for a walk and I'll just, you know, relax and unwind.
Yeah.
And sort of process the day and, like, what I want to do tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And then I get back on the computer and I go, all right, what's next for me? What's next for us, you know?
Right.
And it's cool. I love learning. I love that feeling of learning. It's why I stuck with making games, because you always feel like, you know, you're coming up with something new.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, yeah. Actually, now that I just said that, I actually kind of did have the luxury to take some time off, which was Shardlight, because even though I was working on Shardlight, obviously, on my off time, I was learning. I bought books on art technique and theory and stuff, and I was practicing right. And learning and trying to get better at drawing. And I think that while I haven't quite mastered it, I do like to think that I've improved somewhat so that Lamplight City looks better than a Golden Wake did.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that's the cool thing. I think we're very fortunate.
Yeah.
Where we both, like, live in a world and an age where you can find books on subjects like composition and perspective and color. You can find internet guides by people that know what they're talking about and some people that definitely do not know what they're talking about. You can find a lot of works just on the internet to be inspired by and go, hey, maybe I could do that.
Yeah.
And that's a very fortunate age to live in. And if you're willing to put the time to study in, I actually think, you know, I never went to university because I wasn't ready to study. Mm-hmm. And now I'm 30, you know.
That's another thing. Learn. You turned 30 while in our break between podcasting. Welcome to your 30s, old Thank man.
You. But it's great because I'm like, you know, now I've actually got the motivation to learn. And this year, one of my goals for the year was to study properly, you know, and you see that in, you know, analysis of game art that I've written about on various websites and things, and, you know, just pushing myself. You know, if you look at my studies of photographs, you know, I took the time to properly learn how to do a study of a photograph to a point where I'm like, okay, this is good enough, you know, and actually put in the time to say this picture is finished, which I never do. Nothing's ever finished.
Right.
So yeah, that was one of my goals, and I feel great for that. And I'm like, this was a great year, you know. I learned a ton of stuff. I feel like I leveled up, you know, and I feel like I was kind of sitting on my haunches the last 10 years, which I obviously wasn't, because, you know, a lot of good stuff happened.
Yeah.
But I feel like, oh man, I could have learned so much if only I'd. But
yeah, well, if only, of course, again, is the curse of the creative mind, I think.
Yeah, but the good thing is, you know, I look at the success that I had this year. I'm like, I want this again next year. I want to learn more next year. You know, I find myself really hungry for knowledge, and Unavowed has been a great learning experience. You know, I'm very lucky that, you know, I can suggest ideas to Dave. I'm like, hey, let's do high resolution. And he's like, okay, I trust you. And like, you know, I've never done it before, but I just jumped into a project head first and like, well, this is going to be the biggest game Dave and I have ever done. Let's also add high resolution to the mix.
Yes.
You know, so it's cool. It's cool that he trusted me enough to try it, you know, and, So I'm like, all right, well, you know, let me try some other stuff. So that's cool.
Yeah.
I also think, like, I think it's probably a little bit different for you because I'm getting more and more specialized. You know, my focus is becoming more and more on art.
Right.
And you're obviously more of a generalist, you know.
Sure.
Not that you don't think a lot about your art and spend a great deal of time and energy on it.
But definitely not as much as you.
Well, you can't. You're designing a game with and writing it and coding it at the same time.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think the fact that most of my job now literally involves drawing, whereas before I was doing coding. You know, even on Shadowlight, I was doing little bits of code and little bits of this and little bits of that.
Yeah.
On and of it, I've just been art.
Right.
Which is good because I couldn't have managed this game without.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think specialization leads to a greater level of skill than if I'd been trying to code and.
Oh, of course.
Doing that.
Jack of all trades, master of none, as they say.
Sure. But I think it's interesting, you know, because I feel like, and I don't want to say this in a mean way, but I genuinely feel like you got to a point where you were good and everybody in the AGS community admired your work, like in terms of artwork especially. You know, I know I did.
Sure.
I was like, man, I can draw great.
And then
you
sort of
plateaued.
Well, everyone, everyone plateaus. But also, I went out into the real world.
Right. But I feel like
very much the AGS bubble.
I feel like, you know, in 2007, when I started making games seriously, you'd release Ben Jordan 6.
Yeah, which was shit looking now. I look back at it, I'm like, it's not great.
Right, but you stayed at that level for quite a while.
Yeah, I guess. I didn't really push myself.
Ben Jordan 8 was a...
Well, that was a weird experiment, but yeah.
Yeah. But, like, you sort of stayed at this level where I was like, oh, yeah, it's Grunder's level. That's how he draws, you know. And then all of a sudden you kick yourself in the pants, I guess.
Yeah.
You know.
Sure.
But it was weird. Like, I spent that whole time learning and stuff because I was brand new.
Right.
And I'm like, now I'm like, I don't want to get to the point where I sit on my laurels for too long.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean...
It's interesting because, like, you know, to see how quickly someone can improve, how much you've improved in the last, I want to say, 4 years versus how much you improved in the last 10 years before that, there's no comparison.
Mm. Well, thanks.
Well, it's, you know, it's true and it's also cool.
Mm. Oh, that's very kind of you. I'm going to blush.
Aww.
You're not. Ridiculous. I'm not saying it to like make you happy or anything. Actually, I'm quite pleased when you're miserable.
I know.
But for the sake of a factual podcast,
mm-hmm.
we've got to cover the facts.
Right.
But yeah, it's interesting to me now. I've recently been going back and looking over my work for Unavowed, and I see a lot of the weaknesses all of a sudden. And it's always a tough time because that's when you start learning the most, you know?
Yeah.
That's when the learning comes, when you realize where the problems are. But the fact when you realize where the problems are in a product, in a game that you're like, we got to finish this up and get it done.
Yeah.
Is also a frustrating time. And I'm at that point that I get in every game where I'm like, I want to redo all of it.
There's one character close up that I don't like, and I don't know why I don't like it. And I'm just like, maybe I should just redraw it. But then I'm like, but I have so many others to redraw. So right now it's on my list of if I get time later on, I'll probably go back and redo it. But if I don't, it's just gonna go in because I'm like, it's one out of all of the other ones. Like I can feel like I'm happy more or less with all the other ones. This one is just, it sticks out as, but whatever. If I don't get to it, I can get away with one bad one if all the rest are competent.
And it's a part of being productive.
Yeah.
That you have to accept that there's going to be a couple in there that you don't like, I think.
Yeah.
Or you can't keep tweaking forever, especially when you're like us.
Oh, yeah.
Who are still very, very, very much learning.
Yep.
And like in those sort of, you know, beginner stages, I want to say.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, we're not beginners, as it were, but we are still
have a lot to learn. How's that?
I don't even know that I'm comfortable putting myself there, but anyway, to get to the point where you're like, this has to come out now. You know, right. it has to be done. I can't be ridiculous. You know, obviously, it's a project that you're doing to earn a living.
Yeah.
And if you keep redoing it forever, and not enough people buy adventure games.
Yeah.
To afford you that time.
Exactly. To redo
it. That's the simple truth of it. You know.
I'm so already terrified that only like 500 people are going to buy the game, and then I'm going to be stuck.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing is, you've got to be like, well, I want this to be the best I can possibly do it.
Yeah.
But I want to be able to make another one more than I want that.
Exactly. Because that's the thing, right? Like, with adventure games especially, day one sales are the most important. And then after that, it just tapers off and then it goes into the long tail thing. So
right. If
you get a bunch of people buying it on the first day and they all say, eh, this isn't really great, then that's pretty much it, because you're pretty much guaranteed to not have anybody buy your game anymore.
Whereas
if word of mouth builds up and people keep buying your game, you know, then it's different.
I think it's hard to tell, honestly, how well a game's going to do.
Well, yeah. But I mean, using my own example, as my own games as an example, A Golden Wake hasn't done great, but the more I read about other people's games, and I'm not calling anyone out, but
mm-hmm.
I've read a few other indie developers who have talked about their sales or listened to them talk about their sales, and relatively A Golden Wake did great in comparison.
Yep. But
held up to other Wajidai games, obviously A Golden Wake didn't sell as well. As say Shardlight, which had a different, obviously it was a different caliber of game. So that's the thing, right? Like if I put all I could at the time into A Golden Wake, maybe if I had taken a little bit more time and made it a more mass appeal game or something like that, I don't know. But people still buy it. I mean, GOG, I just got a payment from GOG, and I actually got one of the best payments from GOG that I had gotten in a while. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it was big sales season as well, which is, you know, a big factor.
Well, sure, but it's not even a consistent thing. The game's been out for 3 years, and
yeah,
the last big sales season, it did okay, but it wasn't. It didn't do as well as now. Well, also, well, there's other factors to consider, but that's beside the point.
There's a lot of factors in all of this stuff. That's important to remember.
There's one in particular, but I don't want to divulge that information. Anyway, continue.
Right. But yeah, it's one of those things where you have to make a choice, you know. And I'm currently playing The Witness, and The Witness took so long to make.
Right.
7 years to make this game.
But also take into account that Jonathan Blow made Braid before that. And Braid made him a
millionaire. So the guy had money.
Yeah.
But if no one bought The Witness, which would have been ridiculous, because this game is great. I gotta say, it's really, really good, and I'm loving the hell out of it. But if no one bought it, he would have spent 7 years of his life on a project that made no money, which is fine.
Yeah.
But then you don't get to do it again.
Well, I think Jonathan Blow probably would have been able to do it again.
Right, but you know, you know what I'm saying.
I know what you're saying.
Like, if you or I spent 7 years on a game.
Yeah.
First of all,
that would be insane.
It just wouldn't work for us, I don't think. I think because
at least not with the type of games we make.
Yeah, because we're generalists and we don't have one guy doing animations, we don't have one guy doing this. You've got, you know, a couple people working on a game. In your case, it's mostly one person.
Yeah.
Now, you know, but although, you know, in Shardlight, going back to Shardlight again, it's you know, a small team working on a game.
Right.
If you spent 7 years working on it, at our skill level, you get to the end of those 7 years and like, boy, now I gotta redo everything.
Well, hopefully you would realize that you had to redo everything before you hit the 7 year mark.
Yeah, but it's like Duke Nukem Forever. They just kept redoing the damn game.
That's true.
You know? It gets to the point where you
Well,
just like.
what were you working on? What were you working on in 2010?
Well, I wasn't working on anything. I was, I
What
did.
games did you make in 2010?
I made a bunch of games. I made probably the one that everyone remembers best was Eternally Us, but that was, that was 1 month, and that was just a weird experiment
But
that.
imagine if Eternally Us was a full-length game and you had started working on it in 2010 and it was now 2017 and you were about to release it.
I would have been really depressed if
I
I
would
worked on that
think
game for
that.
3 years.
Well, all that aside, what I mean is, if you look at your art style, for example, now on Unavowed and the art style in Eternally Us, I'm pretty sure you would have probably, at least in 2014, would have said, I think I need to redo this, because in 2014 you made Epiphany, and
Well,
Epiphany was a.
I had to redo one of the characters from Eternally Us on like the second last day because she looked like a pig and I didn't realize until.
You should have kept that
Yeah, poor old pig girl. That's what.
Wait, which character? There weren't that many characters. Was it Fiona or was it
Yeah,
Amber?
it was Fiona. Yeah,
Oh.
oh, I wouldn't have redone Amber. She had too many frames animation. But yeah,
That's funny.
that was funny. Like having to redo a character like right before. But yeah, that's the thing, man. I feel like I've got so much to learn that there's just no point doing a long dev cycle because by the end of it, you're like, ugh, you know?
Unless,
Though
like
I'm
you
like
said,
that at the end of every dev cycle anyway,
well,
but.
yeah, the only way, I think the only way that we could make a game and take a long time to make it is if we hired a team of professionals to work on the stuff that we needed improvement in.
Yeah,
Which in
that's
my
it.
case
Which
would be
for me is
everything.
everything.
Wow.
Well, that's true, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you'd have to
And
pick the one thing that you feel you're strongest at and probably dedicate yourself to that. Like, if I were to take a super long time, I would hire a writer and I would hire an artist and I would do the design. So, and obviously a composer as well. But,
Well, you already do that anyway,
well,
so.
yeah.
That goes without saying, kind of. But yeah, I feel like for me, I really don't see. It's hard to see a massive future in like low res adventure games. And so you know, that's what I'm good at.
Definitely not 320 by 200. I mean, I've already said, like you have,
Right.
that I'm never going back to that.
And
I'm
it's.
also like I was thinking about, excuse me, my when I started doing Lamplight City and I pushed up the resolution, I it's at 640 by 400, not even at 360 or 640 by 360. So it's not widescreen and it's the game is already natively letterboxed, so I think for most people they're going to have the black bars on the side and on the top. But that doesn't really matter now to me at this point because there's no point going back and redoing everything so that it's, I tried just to see what it would look like, but the sheer amount of time it would take me to redesign all the UIs and all of the hotspots and the walkable areas and everything, it's just not worth it. So I'm just gonna learn for next time. And I've thought about making my next game 640 by 360, but then I've also thought about making my next game higher resolution than that. I just have to do some tests and see. But right now I'm leaning towards 640 by 360, which, with the way AGS is now and how it's being updated, it's fine, especially with OpenGL. Like, it'll scale fine on most PCs, so it won't really be an issue anymore. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm still not sure what's next. I mean, I got one project in the works, you know, that's I guess I, you know, pretty much locked in it for style now. But beyond that, I'm like, you know, I think it's cool to have that potential to say, you know, I want to experiment. I want to do something different. Because I think if you start resting on your laurels, you become sort of predictable and you become sort of stale.
Sure.
You know, and when I started working for Dave, you know, I was just happy to get a gig drawing pictures for money. I was like, this is awesome, you know. But then it got to the point where I'm like, yeah, I want to keep doing this.
Yeah, and, sure.
Yeah, so I'm like, all right, well, let's push ourselves, you know. Let's see what we think will work and try it. And I think that's been a big part of Unavowed for me was like, well, I did 3 games with Dave in this style, you know. Mm. I guess the Shiver, but that's tiny, it doesn't count. Well, not really.
I think it does.
It was like a month's work. It doesn't really, you know.
Well, anyway. Like, it counts because it's the same style. It looks like your other work.
Right. Anyway, I got to the point where I'm like, I know I can do this. Mm. I want to try more. But now that I've seen that I can do Unavowed, I'm like, I'm still really holding myself back. So, you know, that's important to me that I don't do that.
So, yeah, I mean, there's something...
It's been an interest...
It's sorry, definitely... go ahead. Oh, no, I was just going to say it's definitely... I think it's definitely become a thing where low-res pixel art has been associated with Wajid Eye because obviously Dave has been around for so long and has been putting out and publishing these games for so long that anytime anyone sees a low-res pixel game, they automatically associate it with Wajid Eye because it's the only active adventure game publisher that works in this resolution. And, well, not to say active, but it's the only, I guess, prolific company. Because when Cathy Rain came out, obviously, aside from the fact that it was low-res pixel art, it was also the background artist from Resonance and the character animator from Resonance. So it was 2 team members that had worked on a Wajid Eye game previously, even though it was a Raw Fury game.
In Shane's case, he's worked on other Wajid Eye games for days.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Yeah, that's right. But anyway, yeah, so like, you know, when that came out, obviously the inevitable comparisons to Wajid Eye games came out because it was like, oh, this looks like a Wajid Eye game with good reason because it was done by artists who'd worked on them. And yeah, like I've mentioned, I don't know if I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but I've definitely mentioned it where, you know, I've shown Lamplight City at a few events here in New York and I've gotten the comment, oh, this looks like, have you ever heard of the Blackwell games? This looks like a Wajid Eye game. And on one hand, I take that as a compliment because it means that my art style is getting good enough that it looks like a Wajid Eye game. And on the other hand, I'm just like, well, okay, does that mean I should do something different to look different? So
it's hard to know, isn't it?
I don't know, isn't it? Yeah. Because, I mean, obviously, like you said, you don't want to look the same, but...
I got a great compliment the other day. Someone said that the guy that I was sketching out looked like Gabriel Knight 3, and I was like, oh, my God. I've never been so upset in my life.
Wow. Yeah, well, what are you going to do? People always
Gabriel Knight 3. Looks like used toilet paper. His face is a mess. I'm sorry, that's me. I mean, it's the limitations of the technology at the time. You know, I was talking to Dave, and we were talking about The Longest Journey. I'm like, go back and look at the original Longest Journey. Look at those character models.
They're terrible.
They're hilarious. Mm. Look how far that series has come in 3 games in terms of graphics.
Well, also, it's a 20, almost 30-year-old game.
Right. But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Wait,
so
what am I
like...
talking about? No, it's not a 20. See, this is the problem I have with
1999, 20 years.
2018 years. It's almost 20 years old. Yes. Hmm.
But yeah, so... there's like, but that's that thing where you know what a Wajid Eye game looks like. I don't know. I think, and I've said this to Dave, you know, I think
But then
there's a thing, because people like the way Jedi start, and they like that we still do the low-res adventure games and, you know, a focus on, you know, background art. And I think they like what they're getting. And, you know, if the Rolling Stones did a disco album, people would be like, what the hell?
If Steve this Wilson isn't... did an 80s pop album.
Well, did you say Steve Williams?
No, I said Steve Wilson.
Oh, Stephen Williams. I must be tired, man.
You must be. But
I also feel like, and I've said this to Dave, like, if you start to look at Techno Babylon and Shardlight, well, Shardlight especially and Unavowed especially, you've got these games that are written like action games, and the animation is too... piles of pixels just bumping against each other like stick, like puppets, you know. There's a dissonance between the visuals, you know, and it's one of the reasons why I've been doing these sort of, I guess, cutscenes or establishing shots or whatever, because you've had these moments that are like massively epic music and massively epic writing and this intense voice acting, and then it's 6 pixels wobbling.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and I'm just like, it's not right. It's not right yet, you know.
Yeah, there's only so much you can do with 2D. But one other point I wanted to make was, as far as the whole it looks like a Y Jedi game, I think even within that, there's a sub-genre, which I think in order to look like a Y Jedi game, it has to be dark and brooding and gritty or whatever, even though those are terrible adjectives. Because Cathy Rain, for example, was a serious, dramatic game, and it had that that look to it. Lamplight City is a dark, more or less dramatic game, and it has that look to it. Nobody thought Order of the Thorn looked like a Y Jedi game. They thought it looked like a King's Quest game, because it was bright and colorful, and it was in a forest. Right. You know, nobody thinks Quest for Infamy looks like a Y Jedi game, because it looks like a Quest for Glory game, because, again, it's fantasy and... whatever. So, you know, I don't think anyone thinks Mage's Initiation looks like a Y Jedi game, even though it's got the same pixel, or rather, character artist on it, Shane.
Yeah, we're not really great at Jolly, are we? We should liven up a bit.
Well, I think the problem with that is Dave's averse to it, because all the colorful games haven't been so good, haven't been as popular. So.
Yeah, but also, if you look at the stories that we're writing, if you look at the story, the narrative of Shardlight, the narrative of Techno Babylon, the narrative of Blackwell Epiphany, and the narrative of our current projects...
Oh, of course.
They're not... they're, you know, it's not Bubbles Goes to the Circus.
Well, no, it's not Bubbles Goes to the Circus, although I'd love to see Bubbles Goes to the Circus.
Same, I'd play that. Yeah. But yeah, it's like, you know, if you...
you, the part of Bubbles will be played by Ben Chandler.
It always is.
So yes.
That's what,
sitting in a bathtub.
How the hell do I get in this goddamn gate? Jonathan Blow is a...
blowhard.
He's a... I got some words for you, Jonathan Blow.
Anyway.
I'm relaxed. I'm enjoying this because it's a game and games are entertaining. And I don't know how to solve this stupid puzzle.
Anything else you want to talk about, or shall we wrap up?
How long have we been
A little over an hour.
Way too long.
Yeah, and I need to get back to work.
Yeah, you do.
I got a lot of stuff to prepare for tomorrow.
What's tomorrow?
Tomorrow's the first day of voiceover recording.
No, I don't pay attention to your life. Good luck. You think I'm joking? I was being earnest.
No, I
This is what happens when I'm tired. I get even more honest than normal.
You earnest. That's hilarious. All right. Anyway, thanks for listening. This is our podcast. This has been our little break from the interim of not podcasting, but there'll probably be another break in the interim because I'm very busy and the holidays are coming up. So this will probably be the last podcast of 2017. So yeah, thanks for listening. We'll be back around sometime. If you want to follow us on Twitter, I'm at Grundislav Games.
I'm unwilling to support a platform that has Nazi sympathizers, and together we are at BCT.
Wow. Wait, what? Are you disavowing Twitter now?
I'm unavailable to her.
Well, that's pretty much 2017 in a nutshell, isn't it? Bye!